Man. Okay, I just wanted to finish that up, and then
I see.
We'll come back.
All
So,
right.
let's go back to Europe. You, where we left it, you had the 106 had landed at Le Havre. You were helping the Navy with a sick seaman,
uh-huh.
and then eventually you connect back up.
Right.
You catch it back up with 106. And you know, get ready in with the town of Saint Van. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to my reading, what I've read is the generals decided to put the 106 there because literally in the last several months there was hardly any activity along that line,
yes. Mm-hmm.
And they realized the 106 was a green unit, and they thought that that would be a good place for them to sort of get acclimated and get some more training and get ready. And so they chose this place for the 106 with that in mind. And so here you are, you get all ready and you get all set up. Why don't you talk about how you guys all got set up in this location? What does it take for a new unit to come into a place, and what kind of things did you do?
Well, we're an artillery unit, so the important thing is to get these, what they call these 105 shells and the batter and the cannons in place at specific locations, and then that would be the main combat assignment, is to man these weapons, and then we would be the supporting thing for any medical needs. And we were assigned a farmhouse on the ridge where we would just set up our aid station.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boys, they're usually at this stage, everybody's pretty hyped up, and they feel it's nearing Christmas, so they were running all over the place, green troops looking for getting all the goods necessary for a Christmas celebration, chickens, whatever they get.
So the sense was that they were in war, but it wasn't like this incredible danger or anything happening. That it
that
was more like
there were no signs of anticipating any kind of battle.
So you're there for just a few days.
That's right.
And this is early December.
Right.
People are thinking about Christmas, but I think it was around December. What was it, 10th or 15th?
Yeah, that's right.
What happens is the Germans decide to launch the largest offensive in the war,
right?
World War II,
mm-hmm.
Commonly called the Battle of the Bulge.
Right.
And where they start the offensive is right where you are located.
So we were the bulge.
Yeah, so talk about what happened. How did you, when did you realize you were in this incredible fight?
Well, we didn't realize it was an incredible fight. We just accepted we were engaged in war, and not knowing that this was a big battle, just something that all combat unit encounter. So for 5 days, it seemed like we were going from one location to another, and one day, after the third or fourth day, the infantry unit that we were supposed to be following came toward us. So our response was, hey, we thought the enemy was over there. And they said, no, they're over here in back of us. So we start getting the inkling we were being surrounded and encircled. But somehow we were able to maneuver in and out. And I think about the fourth night, we were digging foxholes, and we could hear the German soldiers passing our area and just hoping they wouldn't find us. But during the night, there's just myriads of flares going up, and we realized we were in a valley because you could tell the different levels at which the flares went off. And it was just an ominous sign that something was going to happen. And sure enough, at break of dawn, first light that came in, the barrage started in and continued relentlessly for the next several hours.
Because at that point, you saw flares essentially all around you.
Yes.
And you could tell that essentially the Germans had the high ground.
Yeah, right.
You were down below.
Yeah.
And you were essentially sitting ducks.
Yeah, when we looked down into the valley, because we put our aid station on the side of the hill, the trucks were all in tandem. And God, it just looked like it's going to be a turkey shoot. Because you couldn't miss. And sure enough, that's what was happening.
And roughly how many men were in that valley that morning?
I really can't say, because things were happening all around. Our regiment and that we were supporting were in the area also, I think. And so perhaps, at least for us, it must have been over 1,000 men or so.
You know, in those 4 days leading up to this, your unit took heavy casualties.
Yeah.
I mean, you were, again, you mentioned how you thought that was just war, but in actuality, it was one of the bloodiest, hardest battles fought during the whole war, and your unit took just heavy, heavy casualties.
But it was especially on the fifth day that it happened.
On that
when
day
then we got, we were encircled, and then they let go of everything.
Yeah. As the battalion surgeon, I mean, you must have seen lots of casualties during that whole period. I mean,
right.
What was it like during those 5 days?
It was just relentless. Just a stream of casualties you had to take care of.
I mean, what kind of range of trauma did you see?
Well, I don't think I saw the worst, because the ones that looked like they were terminal apparently were just left there, because the chaplains came. There were two chaplains, one a Catholic white-haired chaplain, Paul Cavanaugh, and another Protestant minister, and they both came and said, what are we going to do? There's so many out there. They need a burial at least. And the discussion, I don't know who said what, but there's no time for burials, at least to give the last rites. And the general thing was do whatever they thought was necessary, but there certainly wasn't time for burials.
So the medics out there were doing some triage, and they were deciding who would actually make
That's
it.
That's right.
But
they brought back the ones that they thought we could take care of, I think. Mm-hmm. Because they knew we had a 3/4-ton truck, and that's where all our medical supply was. And by the fourth or fifth day, we had very little to work with, hardly any plasma. Morphine was probably running out by then, and all we could do was to evacuate the soldiers best we could.
Mm-hmm. I mean, did it ever seem, I'm just thinking how did it seem ever like a contradiction to you? Here you were trained as a doctor to save lives.
Yeah.
And yet you're thrust in a situation like this battle, this war,
mm-hmm.
where you see such heavy casualties, you know, heavy loss of life. I mean, did ever just like, you know, did you ever think about that?
Oh, in fact, the whole rest of the war, experience in war and after the war in Japan, you know, here we're in our training, we're monitored to do everything we can to save one life, and that was our responsibility. And if you didn't have that sense of responsibility, said one of the professors actually said, you have no business being here. You might as well get out. And I think words of that nature were sometimes said if you don't give all out to learn everything about the disease, the condition of the patient, and attending to the patient. And that was kind of fine doctors we trained under. So when you see this kind of situation, it's incredible that it's against any kind of training we were on.
Well, we see, the image I have is almost like this bursting dam, and you're like a little finger trying to hold it back,
right.
Where it's just like, it's just overwhelming. Right. There's physically only so much one person can do, and with all this injuries and death around you, it must have been very hard.
Yeah.